Hi, I'll tell you a little bit about me and my parent moment, wanting to share two readings or two quotes first that are related to what I'll be speaking about today. So the first is a quote from Alvin Toffler, who founded Fortune magazine that did some work with unions, and he had this to say about work with young people and what's happening with young people. The secret message communicated to most young people by the society around them is that they're not needed, that the society will run itself quite nicely until they, at some distant point in the future, will take over the reins. Yet the fact is that society is not running itself nicely, because the rest of us need all the energy, brains, imagination, and talent that young people can bring to bear down on our difficulties. For society to attempt to solve its desperate problems without the full participation of even very young people is imbecile. The second, you may have heard it attributed to Nelson Mandela, but it was actually written by Marianne Williamson on the event of Nelson Mandela's inauguration. And so what she said on that momentous event is this: our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It is not just in some of us, it is in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. Always brings me to tears. My name is Rena Kolchitsky. My mom brought me here when I was a young person, and I've since gone on and done other things and don't focus on this every Sunday morning. I know this from the folks gathered here, there are a few folks who are in my generation, and that is often the case. The work that I do, though, is with the Heartwood Center for Community Youth Development. And I think of it often as a place where I get to live some of the values that I know are part of the tenets of universalism. So I've been working with Heartwood for the last 4 years. I've got some experience working with young people through the ages, having been one once. I'm going to talk a little bit about how the work that Heartwood does. My mom invited me to come and be a part of your service today to talk a little bit about how the work that Heartwood does in community development with young people might intersect with some of the ideas and proponents of the philosophy of the UU congregation and community. So I have two core ideas that I'm going to sort of introduce to you. One, I'm going to try to make technology work. So starting with that quote, you can see up there, imagine if all youth were seen as community leaders and all youth knew that to be true. I want to pause back on that idea again to think, to envision, to really think about knowing what our communities look like now, thinking about what the possibilities might be. What would your community, your family, the schools that your young people attend, this community, what would this community look like if young people knew that they were seen as community leaders? If young people actually were community leaders here, and how different that might look. So that's a bit of the core philosophy that Heartwood works with, is that communities across Nova Scotia are bereft of that kind of idea, and we work from a place that hopes to support young people in understanding that about themselves and connecting what they're passionate about, what their real skills are, and seeing themselves as part of the community and how they can use their skills and their wisdom and their gift to contribute to their communities. But we also understand that youth can't do that on their own. They need the support of adults to do that. And so I more often work with adults in shifting our culture around youth inclusion and youth engagement. So not just to have young people along with us, you know, we don't send them off to learn on their own, but that we welcome them into the processes and that we really need to shift where our minds are and where our hearts are and how we operate. How things have always been done needs to shift to really engage young people. I think about that as an intersection with what some of the tenets of universalism is around all people having inherent dignity and worth. And that the kind of work it has done, part of the reason I choose that quote from Marianne Williamson is that this work connects with the work that it takes to shift to include all marginalized populations. So some of the work that Heartwood does is really sees young people as marginalized for most of the institutions and systems and structures that we work in, and that we lose out when we do that. I think you're probably looking at me going, Marina, you're a young person. And I am, I think, younger than many of you on the room. But like my mom, I've been blessed with I don't look how old I am. I'm 36, so I am an adult. I'm supposed to be a grown-up. So one of the other ideas I wanted to introduce you to is this. You may have seen or heard of it before. The image really helps. So this is Johari's window, and it was created by these two folks, Joseph Luft and Harry Ingram. So Johari is a combination of their two names, Johari, Joe and Harry. And it is a model that looks at how we relate to each other. So this may seem a little bit obscure, but I'm going to come back around to it. But the top right-hand corner, the open part, that's like what I know about myself or what you know about yourself as an individual and what other people know. That's the stuff that everybody sort of knows about who you are as an individual. You know it. Everybody else knows it. And then there's this other part of you that you know, but you don't necessarily share with other people. And that's like the facade. That's the part that you keep hidden about yourself as an individual. And then there's also that part, it's like what you know, what you don't know about yourself and what others know about you. So sometimes that's like personal family history that other people haven't told you about yet. Or maybe it's behavior that you don't see yourself doing, but others do. Things that other people know about you that you're totally unaware of. And that's part of who we are also. And then there's the unknown area. And that's the stuff that you don't know about yourself and others don't know either, but it's still there. It still remains true. So those are sort of four quadrants of who we are as individuals, and we can apply that idea to who we are as communities as well. Joe and Harry developed this model as a way of thinking about how do we relate and be in relationship with others, and that we can use it as a way to know ourselves and to know others, and to also think about how do we trust and build community together. And so there's some actions that are taken. So the idea is that as we work together, we can do better if that part that is known to us, the open stuff and known to others, if we can enlarge that, then we work better. The more we know about ourselves and others know about us, the better we can work together. So the bigger that open space is, the better things are when we're in community. And that happens in three ways. One is people give us feedback. Did you know you interrupt me all the time? I didn't know. Thank you. That'll help me understand how we work together. So that's like opening that space of, oh, now I know this about myself and I can pay attention. There's also the part of self-disclosure, of sharing with other people, the parts of us that we keep hidden that maybe we feel vulnerable about. But we can be bigger, greater, and in better relationship when we're able to trust and share more of ourselves. So expanding it through, you know, intentional, I hear from other people and I take that in and I accept it, or I ask for that feedback about myself. And then there's also that part where I share with others through disclosure. And then there's the part that relates to the theme of your services this month around revelation. This is the revelatory, so that the thing that happens to broaden that quadrant into that unknown quadrant, the thing that people don't know about you and that you don't know about them, is this experience together where we grow and learn together and something becomes apparent just in our relating to each other and our working together. So that's revealing, it's revelatory, and that's a little bit about, or part of the connection to the service today. So I'm going to move on from that, because that was a lot about a little thing that we're going to connect back to. But thinking about how this works in community, individuals in communities, or when communities interact with each other. So the other basic thing that I want to introduce you to in thinking about how Heartwood does the work that we do, Heartwood has existed for over 25 years. Started in Day Spring, Nova Scotia, and for the first 2 years of its life, worked out of Day Spring and Bridgewater, and mostly did work with young people on canoe adventure leadership trips. So youth aged like 12 to 18 were going on these really amazing experiences, exploring themselves and their communities, usually during summer programs. And the founders and the people who were working with Heartwood at the time kept hearing from young people who were coming back and saying, I had an experience with Heartwood on that trip that was life-changing. And I felt like I belonged and like I had a place and I had purpose in a way that I don't have anywhere else. When I go home, so these young people were coming from across Nova Scotia to do trips, mostly around Kedji in that area, canoe paddling, camping trips. And they were coming back every year saying, when I go home, I don't have this. I come back to Heartwood to have this sense of place, belonging, and like people see me. And the founders went, well, that's really great. We're doing a great job. But that is not a good diagnosis for what's happening in the rest of Nova Scotia, that it's hard for young people to feel like they have a place at home. It's not good. So they sought out funding to do some research, to find out from young people who were engaged and felt like they had a place, to find out what does it take. If that's something we want across Nova Scotia for young people, and if we want Nova Scotia to benefit from the wisdom and gifts of young people, what are we as Heartwood doing right, and what can we share with others? And the founders knew enough to ask for those young people. So what I'm going to introduce you is what initially was called the Framework for Community Development, but then young people, in working with it, said, that sounds really boring. Can we call it the Circle of Awesomeness? So what you see on the right, I'm going to walk you through fairly quickly and just point out the key components. And so this is what young people, as a marginalized group of people in Nova Scotia, said, hey, if you want us involved in your community, if you want to benefit from us and so that we can benefit really from you, if we can be in this thing called community together, this is what we need. So young people said, if what you're offering looks like you value these things, we're interested and we're going to get involved. So the core values, I need to move this closer. Maybe this? Yeah. No! Is it a touch screen? We'll find out. Yes. Okay, so these are the core values are passion, an opportunity to contribute, that people are taking action, they're connecting with each other, and they're having fun. So who says all young people are good with technology? So if young people see that these things are happening, that people have an opportunity to do that, they want to be involved, they want to be there, and they're going to stick around if those things are continuing to be valued. They also said they need to have supportive peers. And what that feels like for a young person is that they're accepted. Where young people have an opportunity where we can create the environment within which young people can really accept each other for all their uniqueness, all the diversity that exists within a group of people, then they're going to be more engaged. So that's one piece of the puzzle. And then we add this. Where young people see that they're needed, where there's an opportunity for them to have meaningful contribution. And meaningful contribution looks like different things. It can be that you involve young people in, I know that you have a spring cleanup in your yard, or you have in the past. So that's something that lots of people can do, and engaging young people and seeing the difference that they make and contributing in that way is great. But that's sort of like, that's like 101 level. We can go deeper by inquiring with young people, hey, what are you actually really good at? Like if they're like, hey, I'm really good at raking up leaves, great, you do that thing. But if that's a young person who physically doesn't feel good about that, or maybe they're a choir soul and they like to really write, then maybe the way that they can meaningfully contribute is to write a journal or a blog post or something to promote what it is that you do here. And that's meaningful for that young person. So seeking out what's meaningful for that individual and how can they contribute in a way that gives back to this community, but is their own individual contribution. Let me add to that adventuresome learning. The quote that we associate with this is learning is fun, and I like to say, although this is true, and I'm going to unpack it a little, the other quotes, unneeded, unsupported, those are things that, yes, actually come out of the mouths of the young people who are asked. Learning is fun, like no young person ever said that. But the meaning of it was discerned from the people who did the research. And learning is fun is about young people having an opportunity to step outside of their comfort zone in a way where they are not pushed, where they have agency to decide, if this is the edge of what I'm comfortable with, that I can take this step and I'm supported by the people around me, and I've decided, and I also have been coached a little around, hey, I know how to take this risk in a way that's manageable for me. It's not too far, it's not into a danger zone, but they're still learning and growing, which is an important key piece of adolescent development. That's happening as young people are teens. We want risk. We want to try new things, but we want to do it in a way that we're supported, and so it's not terribly anxiety-inducing, but where it actually is a fun experience. So that's where the learning is fun comes from. And people say, if we have opportunities, if we're not just being told to sit down and shut up, and we have opportunities to explore, and to do that in a way where we're supported, and we see ourselves achieving things, and it's fun, we want to be there and to be involved. We enter that empowering culture. I always struggle with the word empowering when I'm talking about working with marginalized groups, because there's this historic connotation around empowerment that it's, I am giving power to you, and that is, in my mind, decidedly untrue, that people have inherent power, and it's just that there are established patterns of power and structures where people who have that power can get out of the way for those who have been marginalized to step into their power and demonstrate it. So I think about that with young people, and I go, how many times do you have a board of directors or a group of people who gather, and it's predominantly older people? And if you really want to engage young people and help them and allow them to demonstrate their power and their wisdom and bring their gifts, we've got to get out of the way. We've got to take care and watch how often we're speaking. How are things going? Are we having our meetings during the daytime when kids are in school? So we got to shift the way that things have been to make room for the power of other people to be included. So that's where young people can actually make real change, really contribute, and really engage. Young people also told us that they need youth-adult partnerships. So this is used to say mentorship. If there was mentorship in place, then young people could more easily engage and would be engaged. It's shifted to youth-adult partnerships because mentorship really denotes a one-way street. It's, I as an adult have things to offer you, come along, let me show you the way. And while that is still a component of it, it is true that adults and our elders have so much to offer, so too do young people. And where young people, where it's demonstrated to young people that they have an opportunity to learn from their elders, but their elders also appreciate what it is that those young people bring, then a young person is going to continue to stay engaged and be engaged in the process or a community. Right, that's the slide that goes along with that. So, that's the wisdom that young people have shared with us around what it takes for them to engage in community. And that's the kind of work that Heartwood tries to do. We try to help adults understand if we're doing things and we want young people there because they have gifts and because they're communities we know. The phrase is interesting in this setting, but I'm preaching to the converted. That this group, this room of people, I understand to value diversity, to want communities to be diverse, to have people in the room of many different capabilities, experiences, and understand that there's richness in that. And so that means to include young people. And we asked young people, what does it take? And this is what they told us. And so in our practice, when we develop programs, we try to do this. When young people get the glazed over look on their face, we don't tell them that they're wrong and they're misbehaving and they're bad, or if they're talking or whatever, or they're not, you know, engaging with what it is. We take a moment and go, what aren't we doing from this framework? What are we doing that we can shift to better engage these young people in it? And it puts the challenges to us to do that with the young people we get to work with, and also to help other adults shift their mindset to do that sort of a thing. And I think what's interesting, so we've done the research with young people, age 14 to 24. That's where this research came from. But every time, almost inevitably, that we do this work or we talk about this, there are adults in the room who go, yeah, you know what, I want that too. These are the things that I'm going to disengage if I don't feel supported, accepted, if I don't have mentorship and sharing relationships, if I don't have opportunities to push my comfort zone in a safer way. That's the other one. I miss one every time. So adults say, this reflects what I need too. And I go, yeah, great. That's awesome. Remember, you've told us this. So that in itself is an illustration of what young people can teach us about ourselves. And potentially, too, what young people and the wisdom of those young people can tell us about just engaging any marginalized group. If we think about how we can apply this in lots of different ways, we haven't done that research. Can't say that that's necessarily true. But it is a thing that I think about, and I think is an interesting question that brings me back to Johari's window. So what is it that in working with young people that we have learned about ourselves, that they have learned about themselves, and that it's sort of a revelation about what it is that we learn through discovery together. So young people have told us about themselves, we have adjusted and reflected on what we could do better, and then broadening even more to think about our communities and how we can better engage all people. So it brings me back to this. I'm not sure what the thoughts were that you had in your head when you were imagining what this community or communities that you're connected to might look like if young people were seen as community leaders, if they knew it was true. But after all of those things that I just quickly went through about what they told us, I'm curious, and hope you'll have some feedback and thought around what more might they offer if we were doing better at engaging them.